I have a great relationship with my compliance team. I don't know how many advisors called their compliance team, just, I got a question. They want to run this by you. That's the team spirit, if you will. That's the team environment we have at IHT, is that I can go to anyone in our team at IHT, as deep as that bench needs to be, whether it's in compliance or marketing or wherever it may be. And it's a yes, I can attitude. I tell the story back when I was in college in Indiana in the 90s. I literally remember that the tellers, the people who work in the bank, used to have a pin on their shirt. And the pin said, yes, we can. And that made the impression on me that that wasn't the environment I was in. And so I needed to find an environment that I could do that. And time after time, example after example, that yes, we can attitude, we figure it out. It's not easy. Sometimes they're like, I'll bring some really strange questions sometimes, but we'll get it done. We'll figure out how to make it happen.
Welcome to the Active Advisor Podcast, brought to you by Harbor Capital. Join us as we learn from pros who have helped thousands of investors live better lives. I'm Brian Moore, and I'll be chatting with some of the brightest minds in the financial advisory business, bringing you insights on practice management and investment research that works for advisors and their clients. Joining me today on this episode of the Active Advisor Podcast is Randy Cohen, a seasoned wealth management advisor at IHT Wealth Management. Randy not only brings a wealth of financial expertise to every client interaction, but also a genuine passion for community, philanthropy, and family. Beyond the numbers, Randy is a community champion. He serves on the board of the Congregation of Kins and the YU Kollel. He organizes a program called CHI, Lifelines I Shine, supporting families that are fighting serious illnesses. And he volunteers his time teaching elementary and high school students as they compete in the National Stock Market Championship. On top of all that, he keeps family at the core of his being, with time outside of work being spent with his wife, his three children, and their lovable golden doodle. In Randy's world, it's not just about managing finances, but building lasting relationships and celebrating the achievements and milestones of his clients' lives. As an advisor at IHT Wealth Management, Randy doesn't just manage assets, he crafts personalized financial journeys. Randy and the team at IHT provide clients with a unique blend of financial acumen and a warm personable touch that goes beyond the balance sheet. Welcome, Randy, and thank you so much for joining us.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Typically here on the Active Advisor, we like to get the conversation started by asking each of our guests, what's the first memory you have related to money or investing?
The first memory that I have of money and investing was when I was 13 years old at my bar mitzvah, when I received stocks from my father's fraternity brother, who was an advisor at the time, and I received AT&T stock and Microsoft stock. Not bad, you know, the good, the bad, and the ugly, as it would be. But so that's the first memory I have of that. And then it's sort of just little by little from there on.
Which stock did you keep the longest?
I kept Microsoft the longest, and AT&T I ditched a while back. I think probably sometime in the last, I don't know, going back from probably the early 90s when I became a Verizon person, where I'm like, no, I can't hold AT&T stock. So that might have been the last time I had AT&T stock. But Microsoft, I held for a very long time.
Well, it's funny. You've been in business a while, such as I. And so you realize that Microsoft is one of those stocks back in the day that was actually had its weight reduced in the NASDAQ. So Apple could have its weight increased.
Right. I always tell that the biggest thing with a stock like Microsoft is, as I've told people for years and years, everyone's always looking for the next Microsoft. And I say that realize that the next Microsoft is Microsoft. And just that's what, if you look at it over, like you said, I mean, over the years, it's reinvented itself many times.
Definitely. One of the things also kind of been good to go down memory lane there about Microsoft with you, because that is the stock that I think everybody in the business knows. We talked about Microsoft's journey. Now let's turn it to Randy's journey. Would love to hear a little bit more about your background and the journey that led you to IHT Wealth.
So that's a long journey. I'll try to sum it up quickly. So well, it really goes back to the mid 80s. My father and grandfather had a wholesale food distribution business. And I was sure that I was going into the wholesale food distribution business. That was the family business until they sold it. So in 1984, it had to be a shift in gears. And I remember that was a really lost time. And so by the time I graduated college, I knew this is the direction I wanted to go. Like at that time, it was a lot of, they weren't hiring. Everybody wasn't out there hiring the way they are now, or at least seemingly they are now. And so I interviewed in the insurance space and in the banking space. And so finally, I did get started in this business directly and made its way through. I started with a full service discount firm. I made it through a super regional firm. It was bought out by a large US-based broker dealer. Then that was bought out by an international broker dealer. Then I moved to Merrill Lynch and then stayed in the wirehouse space. And then I made my way to IHT. And ultimately, the idea behind that was just at the point in my career I was about 7 years ago, it was the time to say, okay, how do I get more time to do what's right for our clients as opposed to follow the corporate hoops to jump through? And that's really where how we ended up at IHT Wellman.
And we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about your journey from starting off in Illinois, going down to South Carolina and back to Illinois.
Right. So I went to college in Indiana. So I started out in my Midwest. I spent a year in Cleveland, Ohio, and then 5 years in Chicago. And then it was time for me to head back to South Carolina and work with my father, who was an advisor there. So when they sold the business in 84, by 89, he was a CFP and he started in the business. So he had a parallel course that he was working on. So in 1998, I got married in early 98, late 98, we moved back to Charleston and I lived there for 15 years before we moved back to Illinois, of course, for the beautiful weather that we have in Chicago and have been here since. So that's sort of my bouncing around, but it's also an incredible opportunity I find because the amount of people that you meet when you move around like that, and that's just simple moving from place to place, from one place to the other and back. People have moved around much more than that. My wife's family moved all the time growing up. The amount of people you meet is amazing.
It really is. I had a similar experience growing up. We moved quite frequently. It was one of those things that I think it makes you a more adaptable person, if we can say that people are adaptable like that. One of the things that I really loved and kind of learning more about your journey is you headed back to work with your father in the financial business for a while, which I'm sure was an amazing experience. And then you and your family decided to move back to the Chicagoland area and join IHT. I have to think that when you were looking to make that transition back, you kind of were looking for the right opportunity and kind of looking for something that not only fit you, but as you mentioned, allowed you to be a better advisor and steward to your clients' assets. Would love to hear more about why you chose IHT 7 years ago in that journey and why you're still committed and on the surface, and I'm sure deep down, very excited every day to be part of that team.
I'll put a little nuance on that. I did move back to Chicago before I came back to IHT. I was still with Merrill Lynch when I was in Chicago for a couple of years before I moved to IHT. But that move to IHT, as I mentioned, and you obviously in this business, you have to really ask that question, why am I moving? Because it's not easy. It is something that you're putting your clients through, you're putting yourself through, you're putting your staff through. And so it came down to the fact that it was about client experience. And it really got to the point where I wasn't happy at work anymore. And my wife and I have this conversation often that I love what I do now. Like you said, I'm happy to come to work every day. It got to the point where it wasn't like that anymore. And it really was the environment and it was the corporate environment that I was in, the business environment that I was in. I spent a year interviewing firms. The guy at the hotel down the street from my office where I used to have my covert meetings, he knew me so well that when I came in, he brought me my coffee with the way it was supposed to be every time. It really was funny. But yeah, so I mean, IHT really allows, it's not just the idea, like, so in the independent space, and the independent space has been around since I've been in the business, and it was always a lure for many people. And it wasn't a lure for me. It just wasn't. I'm not the kind of guy who says, oh, wow, I wish I would have gone independent sooner. I don't. I learned every piece of the puzzle. I managed an office back in the 90s. That was incredible education. I sat on a trading desk in my first year in the business. That was incredible. Every piece of that journey has been a learning piece of that. But when I started working and looking at IHT, and it was barely visible then, but in the 7 years, the visibility is incredible to as late as yesterday, from the standpoint that it is the attitude that, yes, we can get it done. Let's figure out how, right? It's all about making sure that what we need to get done, we can get done. And we all know that there are certain industries, and I'll stop dropping names of organizations that may or may not be good at this, but not prudent to do so. But some people can't think out of the box. And in our business, which is so regulated, I understand that to some degree, but there is ways to be out of the box thinkers while still staying within regulation. I'm not interested in pushing regulation. I have a great relationship with my compliance team. I don't know how many advisors called their compliance team, just, I got a question. They want to run this by you. That's the team spirit, if you will. That's the team environment we have at IHT, is that I can go to anyone in our team at IHT as deep as that bench needs to be, whether it's in compliance or marketing or wherever it may be. And it's a yes, I can attitude. I tell the story back when I was in college in Indiana in the 90s, Bank One was one of the banks at the time. I folded into 500 different banks since then. But I literally remember that the tellers, again, those are the people who work in the bank, for those people who can't remember what a teller is, the tellers used to have a pin on their shirt, and the pin said, "Yes, we can." And that made the impression on me. That wasn't the environment I was in. And so I needed to find an environment that I could do that. And time after time, example after example, that "yes, we can" attitude, we figure it out. It's not easy. Sometimes they're like, I'll bring some really strange questions sometimes, but we'll get it done. We'll figure out how to make it happen.
And that's got to be invigorating to a large extent, I'm sure.
Right. It's like I said, to tell a client that has it as a request that doesn't seem so out of reach. Look, we all have some of the strangest requests from clients.
I'm sure.
But some of them are logical. And you say, okay, well, we should be able to make that happen. And if you have to tell them no to a logical request, even though it's something that maybe has never been done or it's not done regularly, but have to say no to that is really, it takes the wind out of your sails. So this does, it is invigorating to be able to say, you know what, let me work on that. I think we can make that happen.
That's awesome. And since you brought up the topic of clients, if you can, I'd love to hear a little bit more about your client experience that you personally provide. One of the things I've found out, and one of the things I find really interesting about doing this podcast is you get to talk to a lot of different advisors from across the country, and each one offers their own unique and differentiated approach to client experience. One of the things I think that makes you really unique and special is that community is at the center of everything you do. Would love to hear about kind of the client experience you offer and the type of connections that you like to foster.
I think it's interesting you use the term unique client experience. And to me, I think that every advisor thinks they have a unique client experience. And like I said, you talk to a lot of us. And so maybe some of them do, maybe many of them don't. I think that everyone loves to say, I tell the story, the idea that in college, they asked, and when you're learning to do interviews, they teach you how to do interviews. So at the business placement office in Indiana, they talk about how you do interviews. And they talk about the kind of questions that you get asked. They say, well, what kind of person are you? And the answer everyone wants to give is, I'm a people person, right? And the answer, that's just, it's a silly question. It's a silly answer to that question, right? So it's that idea that sounds unique, but it's not unique, right? So what I do is, I think, somewhat unique in the idea that I am involved greatly, not all of my clients, but many of my clients are in the Orthodox Jewish community in which I live. And that provides its unique challenges and opportunities. And so from a standpoint of the challenges and opportunities, I know what challenges and opportunities my clients are going to deal with. I deal with a lot of newlyweds when we start doing budgeting. And I can tell you that many newlyweds, for example, think, okay, budgeting 101, right? Here's how much I need every month. Well, that may be true, but if you are in our community, that's how much you need every month, except for you need more this month and you need more this month for this holiday. You need more this month for this holiday. Not just, for example, some people think, oh, I just need it in December for Christmas or Hanukkah, okay, but I also need it for this time and I need it for this time. That's a unique piece. The idea of what is often educational costs and private education costs and things like that. These are unique pieces that are interesting challenges and interesting opportunities. And so what I'm able to bring is a little bit more of that. Here's a little bit of a background. And it's not just obviously to the newlyweds. Obviously, I'm working with people who learned more about that than I have. When I've got 80 and 90 year old clients, they've certainly gone through all that. But the fact, the real thing that I love about working in our community, and again, I'm not solely within our community, but I do take this to my other client base as much as I can, is that I see these people every day, right? It's no longer, so when I worked in Chicago in the 90s, most of my clients, because I was working at a discount broker, most of my clients, I knew in this relation, as I just described, I knew about 5% of my clients, right? Knew them well. The other 95%, I worked with them. I helped them establish their goals and achieve their goals. But 95% of them, I couldn't pick them out in the crowd. When I moved back to South Carolina, that changed to the point where 95% of the clients that I had probably knew me when I was born. And that changes the way you interact with people. And so it is unique in that regard. That's my sort of special sauce, is that I work with these people, I talk to these people, I pray with these people, I have meals with these people on a regular basis. And it just changes the dynamic. I know when they're having troubles. I know when they're having exciting, great times. So it's a unique piece in that regard that allows me to feel much closer to those clients.
And I have to imagine it takes the what some people see as kind of a more transactionatory type relationship to a much more personal level, much more kind of deeper fundamental meaning to it as well.
It does. I mean, I always tell all my clients, my dream is that you start calling me and you say, how am I doing versus my against my goals versus how am I doing versus the market, right? And that really comes down to it. I had a great call with a client just 2 days ago who celebrated the 1 year anniversary of his retirement. Look, that's why I do what I do. This is, you know, milestones like that we can celebrate together, you know, kids' weddings and those kinds of things. You see them on TV, the commercials where, oh, I got an invitation to my financial advisor's, you know, the financial advisor's coming to the wedding. That's wonderful. That seems hokey, but it's real. It's an amazing thing. And so, yeah, it does change that dynamic. And the biggest question, a lot of times people will ask this, and in many different industries, I talk to people who are live and work in our community, but don't work with people in our community, right? My son last year worked for a construction company that didn't do construction in our community. Like that was like specifically he prospected outside of our community. Whereas there's many people who do work in our community. And the question always comes to me is like, okay, but what do you do when it's a bad market? Like, do you not go and see these people? Right? I mean, like you're going to walk down the street, you're going to see the guy that the market's down 20%. How are you feeling in that interaction? And that actually drives the relationship better because of that fact that you have to be prepared for that. You can't hide under the desk anymore. And that requires you do more in that part of your conversation so that you are prepared for that. Look, we know that we could see a 20% downturn, and this is what we're going to do if that happens. And it's not going to change your long-term goals and the outcomes.
Very true. You brought up a couple of great brief bits about client stories. Would love to hear, looking back, is there a story that stands out in your mind where your personalized approach, or I'd say deeper approach, has had a profound impact on your client's life?
There's a couple. I'll tell you. So the first one, the first memory I have like that actually was probably one of the more disappointing ones, right? And that is, so in the late 90s, when we know the markets were going crazy, I had a client when I was in Chicago, I had a client and literally she just killed it. The market was amazing. And I said, don't mistake a bull market for brains. It was, the market helped, but we did very well, made a lot of money for her, to which she immediately bought herself a new house. I asked her if she put my name over the front door, but she did not. And in fact, and this is why I say it's the disappointing part of the story. In fact, she found herself so successful that she was so smart that she left. And because she now knew how to do this on her own, until about 10 years later, when she called me back and said she needed my help because she had proceeded to go straight the other way. But that was so, the early part of that story is the success part of the story. The other part, I guess I would say, is that one of my clients that I've had for the longest, I started with him when he was early in his career. He was referred to me by a friend of mine who's in insurance, and he had a small practice with a couple of doctors. And it turned out that we literally went from how you can save, how you can invest, to how we can build a retirement plan for your practice, to how we can continue to build your practice, to where a couple of years ago, he sold that practice. So literally all the way through that to now, he's able to do more of what he wanted to do, when he wants to do it, how he wants to do it, and really not have to worry about the money. He's never really done that anyway, but it's that's sort of the success piece of the idea of really all it took was knowing what he was trying to accomplish, helping him get there, monitoring what he's doing, and making changes that need to go along the way. And what it really came down to, and again, I know this isn't unique in our business, right? It's amazing to me that we're at this long into the conversation and the one word hasn't come out. And that's just about trust. That trust is imperative. And without that, that's what I really strive to build every day. And the first thing that I do, because you have to have that or there's nothing else there.
No, agreed. I love your stories. I've got to admit, one of the things that I've found being in this business for a while is that there's probably, obviously, we never get the chance to do this, but there's probably a lot of lessons that you've learned along the way in life. So given the successes that you've had over the years, what advice would you like to give to a younger Randy Cohen just starting out?
So I will tell you that the advice that I would give to me is the advice that I got, because this took me from 1993 to today, and hopefully will take me to the next to continue to go from there. And that was simple. 1993, I'm getting started in the business, and there's really an important lesson that you need to remember from day one, because especially in getting started in this business, it can get very sexy and sizzly where you are. One of the companies that I interviewed with, and I did not take a job with, it went out of college. Literally what they did was with their first, in the first day when their advisor comes in. Now, everyone knows when you first start, your first 2 days are horrible because all you're doing is paper. Well, what they did in day two was walk the new advisor, the new recruit, down to the BMW dealership and sign a lease, right? Why did they do that? Of course, we all know why they did that. They made them hungry and they give them a little bit of swagger, right? Now I am driving a BMW. The advice that I was given by my father while I'm looking for a job and while I was getting into this business was very simple. Always do what's right for the client. After that, it's all going to work out. And that's the advice I would give to anyone. And I would tell you that is probably the paramount advice that people have to look at. Every regulation that's written is written for that person, that particular piece. Look, we've got BI, right? The best interest, right? It's all about that, right? And so that would be the advice that I would give myself and anyone else as I was given them. And I continue to say, if I had a mantra, which I do have mantras on my wall, if I had a mantra, that would be my mantra. So always do what's right.
Well, you can empty the tank for your client. There we go.
Exactly.
That's so true. And then that, unfortunately, I think can get lost nowadays. But doing right by your client is really the foundation or the cornerstone for everything else that this business is built on.
Right.
We're going to shift gears here a little bit. We mentioned in the intro that you work with high school and elementary students regarding finances in the stock market. I would love to hear kind of what drew you to that and how it's helped form the philanthropic work that you do in the community.
I would actually flip that around a little bit and tell you that the philanthropic work that I do in the community drove me to work with high school and elementary school kids, because my family has always been a family of giving back. My parents, one of my favorite quotes of my mother's was, is that at some degree, we have to look at the fact that we have to pay rent on this earth for being here. And one of the ways to do that is give to others. And so philanthropy is always a big piece that I've been involved in. I've been involved in boards in different places and involved in different pieces of that. And in doing that, I look at basically how I can, you know, one of the things that I've seen over the years is that philanthropy, and it's gotten a little bit of a resurgence. I actually, believe it or not, I'm going to give props to a Mark Zuckerberg for resurgence, you know, to giving some resurgence in the millennial group into philanthropy, because after he went public and he issued the idea of how much money he was going to be giving to charity, that really made a big splash. And I think it made it cool again to give money. But what you saw was a downturn in younger people believing that they should give to others. And so I think you've seen that change. And so one of the reasons why I think it's so important to work with kids and teenagers is to help them understand that's important. Now, I don't teach philanthropy per se in the classroom. It is something that I talk a lot about with my clients and in general, but when my ability to communicate with the students, not to mention the idea that this is an important time, right? That there's so much, I mean, like I know I'm excited. I met someone who's a freshman at Indiana just the other day, and he told me he's trying to get into the business school. He wants to study entrepreneurship. There was no entrepreneurship classes when I was in Indiana. So the idea that the classes that are available now are much more targeted. But in the school, certainly in elementary school and in high school, there's nothing to help to drive that interest to the idea of how can money make things different, right? And I'm not suggesting that money is the root of everything. As we know, people say money is the root of all evil. But what I would say is that if you have an understanding of how to invest, how to look at companies, how to consider investments, and that, I mean, when I work a lot with them, it's about the stock market game. It is actually counterintuitive to what I do every day, because it really, there's only one way to win the stock market game. And that is to, in a short period of time, make the most amount of money. And that's wonderful, but there's no risk because you're not using your money. So what the only way, the people who win those stock market contests are the ones who are way out over their skis on risk. And that's, like I said, it's counterintuitive for me, but it is what I allow them to do. What I'm able to do is to go in and work with them on some of the critical thought of why do you like a company? One of the classes I went to, I spoke to him at my first meeting with them, I said, well, what stocks do you own? And they said, oh, we own Amazon. I said, great. Why do you own Amazon? They said, because Jeff Bezos is the richest guy in the world. Okay, that's the reason why you bought the stock. So the idea of being able to sort of mold that a little bit and drop that, help with that education, helps a little bit. At least that's sort of what drives me to do that.
I think it's also, I mean, financial literacy is something that we definitely need to teach younger.
That's a big piece of that. Now, again, I don't get to do a lot of that. That's another step that I'd love to be able to do. I know that we're starting to see states pass those laws, and I would love to see the schools adopt those laws much more stringently. That, I mean, I joke about it with people when I say, okay, you want to make a deposit, you want to leave me a check. And they're like, what's a check? Right? I mean, I'm dealing with my 21, 22, 23-year-old clients. They don't know what a check is. But forget the idea about writing a check, how to write a check. That's what we learned when we were in school, right? But the idea of home ec, if you will, is gone. And I think this is a new version of home economics that probably should be taught, and it's not. And I deal with the aftermath. The couple that's just gotten married and have no idea on how to put together a budget. You're exactly right. I think that the idea of teaching financial literacy in school should be a big deal. We're working on making sure everyone can put away money for retirement, but we're forgetting how to get there. And it's a big problem.
Without a doubt. A lot of great topics we covered today. Thank you so much for your time. I want to ask you one more question. At Harbor, we're firm believers in active management, but we also acknowledge that every financial expert has their own unique perspective. From your experience, where have you observed active management making the most significant difference?
So this is the tough one, as you know. Anyone who believes in active management has a hard one. I happen to be a believer, so this is not a hard question for me. I look at it in a real simple way. Look, the math is hard to go against, right? We all know the statistics. We all know the number. Hard to beat the averages, right? Well, who wants to be the average, right? We always want to be above that. And we're always looking for that better piece. I look at it again, it's much different. And to me, it's all about risk. I think that most people, if you're just trying to shoot for the moon, there's a different mindset that you can take, right? It's sort of like the stock market contest mindset. That's not what I'm out for. If I'm out for that, some of my clients will take a small portion of their portfolio and they'll play with it, if you will. Yeah, I'm not a big fan of using the term play with money, but that's sort of what they do. But from an active management standpoint, the reason I believe in active management is simply risk management. And the idea is this, I look at it this way, especially now we're talking about self-driving cars, right? I don't know about you, but my car makes beeps so many different times. There's no way it's going to self-drive by itself without bumping into things. So I'm not expecting that anytime soon. But we talk about self-driving cars. I look at the idea of passive management is that self-driving car. And when I look at it and I think about the idea, I went driving. I had to go pick up one of my kids last night before last. It was a horrible, horrible rainstorm in Chicago. Literally like a microburst for a half an hour. Everyone was watching on TVs about when to go into the basement for a tornado. And as I'm backing out, the car literally slams on its brakes because it does that automatically for some reason. It thought that the rain was something that it needed to stop so I didn't run into. That is great if it does that, right? Because it's going to stop me from running into things. And that's what we believe that these autonomous cars or semi-autonomous cars are going to give for us. But I look at it real simple. If I'm driving in a rainstorm, if I'm driving on a curvy road, if I'm driving where the idiot next to me is going to do something that he's not supposed to do, I want the manager, the driver with his hands on the wheel, right? You hear a lot about the idea that, I mean, even my car, it'll do a little bit of its own steering. But if you take your hands off the wheel, it tells you, put your hands back on the wheel. And that's what I tell people. I said, until the market is stable and balanced, which I don't think it ever has been or ever will be, but until the market finds some stability and balance and some of the crazy things that are going on in the world die down a little bit, I want a manager with his hands on the wheel, because that is what the active management does. It allows them to avoid the potholes, avoid that guy who's swerving into your lane to make a right turn because he goes a little bit wide before he turns. All those things where passive management doesn't do that. And you'll run into a lot of cars, you'll hit a lot of potholes, and you'll swerve out of control. And that's why I think this, and that's why I'm a big believer in active management. I do believe, as I'm sure that most people do, is that active has a place and passive has a place. But that's my belief in active.
Agreed. And that's a great analogy that you mentioned. I mean, I think it's so funny in talking to advisors and traders or whatever, even passive indexes are making to make that decision. It's an active management decision you've made to go with that index. But I think your analogy and story kind of brought it into a much more digestible experience for everybody. So thank you. Last question. What's the best way for people to find you?
The best way for people to find me is my website. It's randycohenihcwm.com. It's where you'll find, I do 2 videos a week, every week. It's a way to set up appointments. It's a way I do a blog. There's some research in there as well. And that's the best way to find me. Of course, that is, unless you're in Chicago, just walk down the street in West Rogers Park, you'll find me there too.
And I recommend everybody to watch them. I've watched several, and I'm going to be a weekly watcher.
If you subscribe to my YouTube channel, then I'll hear it from my son, who loves to count how few YouTube subscribers I have.
Well, my daughter does the same thing with this podcast, so don't worry.
Our biggest fans, right? Our biggest fans.
Exactly. Okay, so last thing I'm going to ask of you today, Randy, I promise. Are you ready for the lightning round, or as they like to call it, 60 seconds with Randy Cohen?
I'm ready.
Nickname?
Randy.
Profession, if you weren't in finance?
Anyone who knows me, they'll tell you that if I didn't have to work for a living, I'd give away money for a living.
What's the best professional advice you've ever received?
Just always look out for the client first.
If you could eat only one food for the rest of your life, what would it be?
Ice cream.
Biggest risk you've ever taken?
Moving my family of 5 when the kids were already growing and with their friends and such, moving them to a new city, a new state, not to mention where it gets as cold as it does in Chicago.
What never fails to make you laugh?
My golden doodle. My dog. She's crazy.
What's one question you think all clients should ask their financial advisor?
How do you define excellence in what you do? And I think that's a question that a client should ask their advisor, because they should know what success will look like.
Best part of your job?
Working with people.
Favorite way to get active?
I'm a big exerciser. There's an exercise program called Orange Theory Fitness. I do Orange Theory. I used to swim a lot, but primarily Orange Theory. And Peloton, I do that one.
Whether you're a seasoned advisor or just getting started, the Active Advisor, brought to you by Harbor Capital, offers professional insights for the financial advisor community. Visit us at harborcapital.com to learn more. And don't forget to subscribe to the Active Advisor on Apple, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts to stay up to date on investment trends, tried and tested research methods, and what your industry peers are up to. From all of us at Harbor Capital, thanks for tuning in.
And now for important disclosures. This material is for informational purposes and is not intended to be relied upon as a forecast, research, or investment advice, and is not a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any securities or adopt any investment strategy. The opinions expressed are as of 1st of March 2024 and are subject to change. The opinions expressed by the speakers do not necessarily represent the views of Harbor Capital Advisors, Inc. The information and opinions contained in this material are derived from proprietary and non-proprietary sources deemed by Harbor Capital Advisors, Inc. to be reliable and are not necessarily all-inclusive and are not guaranteed as to accuracy. This material may contain forward-looking information that is not purely historical in nature. Such information may include, among other things, projections and forecasts. There is no guarantee that any of these views will come to pass. This material may not be representative of the experience of other individuals. Reliance upon information in this material is at the sole discretion of the viewer. This material is not legal, tax, or accounting advice. Please consult with a qualified professional for this type of advice. Investing involves risk, including the risk of loss. Stock markets are volatile, and equity values can decline significantly in response to adverse issuer, political, regulatory, market, and economic conditions. Fixed income investments are affected by interest rate changes and the creditworthiness of issuers. As interest rates rise, the values of fixed income securities are likely to decrease. Specific companies and issuers are mentioned for educational purposes only and should not be deemed a recommendation to buy or sell any securities. Any companies mentioned do not necessarily represent current or future holdings of any investment products. Harbor Capital Advisors, Inc. does and may seek to do business with companies covered in this podcast. As a result, listeners should be aware that the firm may have a conflict of interest that could affect the objectivity of this podcast. This material is prepared by Harbor Capital Advisors, Inc. Harbor Capital Advisors, Inc. is not affiliated with IHT Wealth Management. All trademarks or product names mentioned herein are the property of their respective owners. Copyright 2023 Harbor Capital Advisors, Inc. All rights reserved.